Hi, I'm Aman.
And I'm Lena.
And we are Grounded Geeks.
Where we make the geek world relevant.
Woohoo!
You know what always throws me off? Always say we are Grounded Geeks, and I always say, and this is Grounded Geeks.
I know, I keep waiting for you to like try to innovate the second line.
Okay, but like, no, I can't. It's
just, oh God, so you know I do it on purpose, right?
Why?
Because it's fun. It's just okay, us.
We're trying it's to be professional fun. And produce a podcast, and you're just messing it up.
I thought we were doing this because for fun, and this is a labor of love.
Yeah.
I mean, where's the love, Lena? Where's the love?
Anyway, so today, I think we mentioned this last week, but I basically made him on watch Fleabag, both seasons, and we're talking about Fleabag. So
yes, Fleabag.
It's not timely in any sense of the word because it came out in 2016 and was done in 2019. There were only two seasons because the writer and main actress of the show, Phoebe Waller-Bridge, is brilliant and knows when to end a story when it has ended. You know, I think there are too many shows out there that just keep going and going and going, and they could have stopped at two seasons, three, four, five, maybe. Yeah. But no, they go on for 17 seasons. So anyway, big shout out to Phoebe Waller-Bridge for knowing when to end her story.
I think that's a big thing with a lot of British TV. They tend to have shorter seasons and they end them.
Yeah. Because I think then like it just turns into, you know, it starts off, I assume, as this passion project. You want to tell this story and you want to keep it going because it's like your baby and all that. Learning how to let something go, it's a big deal.
And the thing is, a good story has to end.
Yes.
That's the thing. And if you want to continue it, you got to then write a new story.
Right.
That's the thing. A story has to end. That's what makes it good.
Yeah. So anyway, talking about Fleabag, I don't even know how to give a synopsis to this, but the main character, played by Phoebe Waller-Bridge, is never named throughout the show, by the way. I don't think I noticed.
Characters are never named.
Yeah. We know Claire. Where's Claire?
That's about it. Claire.
Mother. Father. The stepmother. What does she refer to the step? Doesn't she have a name? Like Elizabeth? No.
No, I don't think so.
Does she? No, she's just known as Godmother.
Oh, right.
And the father is just known as Dad. There's Claire and Martin.
Yes.
There's Boo.
Yes.
Oh my God, we don't even know the priest's name, do we?
No, he's just the priest.
He's just not even that. He's the hot priest.
Oh, they call him the hot priest in the credits?
Okay. No, he's known as the priest in the credits. But like, between like, you know.
Oh, you're just giving Fleabag and Claire now.
No. I'm saying they refer to him as the hot priest in the show.
That's true. They do.
Yeah. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah. Okay.
Anyway. So, should we just call her Fleabag?
Yeah.
The character? So, she runs a cafe.
Yes.
Well, started it with her friend, and it is hamster themed.
Yes.
Which is a
no, it's not hamster themed, Lena.
What is it?
Shame on you. It's guinea pig themed.
Oh my God, I apologize.
Which is hilarious because of that scene at the end of the second season where that the loan
guy
at the bank gives her then a hamster.
Oh yeah. Bank manager, as he's
the bank
known.
Manager, yes. He gives her a hamster and he's like, oh, I got you a guinea pig. And she like, you know, does her fourth wall breaking thing and goes, it's a hamster.
It's a hamster. That's true. Oh my God. That's really funny.
So well done, Lena.
Yeah. Totally forgot. Yeah. So there's a lot of themes on this show. There's a lot of, I feel like I'm just going to start listing them. There's definitely father-daughter relationships.
Yes.
Mother-daughter relationships. Sister relationships.
Yes.
There is trauma. Mm-hmm. There is grief.
Yes.
There's guilt.
Yes.
Involved.
Yes. I'd also like to say there is a whole theme of not dealing with your shit.
Yes. Yeah.
I would say, in general, overarching this whole show is the theme of not dealing with your shit.
Although,
and just letting it explode.
That perfectly encapsulates season one. But in season two, in the beginning, it takes place a year after the end of season one. And she has been working on her shit. And everyone is so, like, the rest of her family is so surprised by it that they still just, like, give her shit. For no, like.
Yeah. When her sister comes to the cafe in season two and she's like, who are all these people? Yeah. Like, are you having an event or something? And she's like, no, it's just a normal day. This is a normal day here. Now.
Yeah.
All right. It's Chatty Wednesdays.
Yeah. Season one, the cafe was just deserted. And then she's like working out. She's eating better. You know, she's like trying to maintain her, you know, weird, like sex obsession stuff, you know, like.
Keeping that under check.
Yeah, she's trying to maintain healthy habits.
Yes.
And then she meets the hot priest.
I guess you could then say season one is about not dealing with your shit.
Yeah.
And season two is about facing your shit.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah. And really having to make difficult choices.
I really don't think the choice of don't get involved romantically with a Catholic priest is that hard of a choice. Just putting it out there.
What do you mean? They like fall in love.
Okay. He's a Catholic priest.
That just doesn't mean he can't fall in love. I mean, I don't know.
But she pushed it, and she should at least have had some respect for the choices that he has made for
himself. Okay, but he also was... Okay, there's a whole scene... Right.
He did.
Where
start
she's
off,
in the confession booth. Okay.
Yeah.
That was all him.
True.
That was him.
True. That was all him. Yeah.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Cause he's also a human being, and I just like don't really This is gonna sound really bad because I'm being mean to a religion and I don't like doing that because that is exactly what's his face does. Bill Maher. He always does that. He just shits on every religion. And I'm like, you're not helpful or constructive or funny. So that you're achieving nothing. But anyway, I just in general, I'm like, I just feel like at this point we all know abstinence is not a long-term solution.
Yes.
For most humans.
Yes.
So.
This is true. Abstinence only sex education is pretty much proven to be, I want to say bullshit, but I believe the technical term is ineffective.
Right. Also is, okay, now I'm just wondering and curious, like, out of the monotheistic religions, like, is Christianity the only one that, like, says for its, you know, religious leaders to be abstinent? And it's not all of them, right? I mean, like, Catholic priests, but there's like other pastors and priests who like do marry and all that.
Yes.
So,
yes.
But like rabbis get married, right?
Yeah, they do.
Yeah. And obviously, imams absolutely. Do. Yeah. So, anyway, it's just interesting.
It's the only one that I know of that I can think of at least that has abstinence as a requirement for religious leadership. I mean, that doesn't include like Buddhist monks or like other of these like many, many like hyper smaller sects where there are monasteries and things like that. But that is not about a requirement for spiritually leading a group of people. That's just a thing that people do for their own personal spiritual growth.
Right. Yes, that's true. Interesting.
So, yes. Orthodox-ish, like the older sects of Christianity are the only ones that I can think of that deal with abstinence, that do abstinence.
Yeah.
As a requirement for religious leadership.
Right. Okay. Well, that was an entirely tangential thought. So
that's what we're here for. That's what we do.
We just have these random tangential thoughts based off of TV shows, comics, and movies. So anyway. Okay, so back to Fleabag. I want to hear more of your impressions, Iman.
Okay. So in general, I was watching this and I was like, at first I was like, another like millennial midlife crisis-y movie, like show and dealing with whatever random bullshit. Mm-hmm. Pretty quickly, I was like, oh, this is funny. And the way that Fleabag does the fourth wall breaking thing with the audience, mm-hmm. it very much reminded me of Deadpool. It was very much gave me that feeling of like, oh, this is the Deadpool version of how Stella got her groove back, but with more trauma, you know, like,
yeah.
like that whole like, oh, you're in the middle of your life. You're not really young anymore. You're worried about getting old and you've mm-hmm. already lived through a lot of shit at this point,
uh-huh.
you know, and sort of, you know, a show that covers that era of life right. and specifically for women. I thought some of the feminist themes were very interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Like she called herself a feminist, but then wrapped up her entire identity around whether men want to have sex with her or not.
Are you like, talking about Fleabag?
I'm talking about Fleabag, yeah.
Character, yeah.
Yeah. And so I thought that was a very sort of interesting take. Like, she kind of thinks of herself as a feminist, but at the same time completely has given in to these non-feminist parts of society.
Well, yeah. First of all, welcome to the patriarchy, which literally, you know.
With your brain?
Exactly. So, and it does it to all of us. Like, I don't know if you've read much of Roxane Gay's work. She's like columnist. She has several books out, but she has a book out called Bad Feminist. And it's like, it's all about like those, wow, what's the word? I can't think anyway today.
Clashing.
Yeah. I mean, those like clashing ideals, the dichotomy of like, okay, yeah, I want to be respected, but I also really like, I don't know, like music that happens to have a lot of demeaning lyrics about women, you know? And it's like, okay, this is where I'm at. But like, that doesn't mean I don't deserve respect or to be respected and what, you know, like, yeah. So I found it very refreshing because it's like kind of like, you know, if you...
It felt very real.
Yeah. I mean, okay, to bring it to something maybe you and I can relate to, like, for example, being Muslim. I feel like we've got all these, there's like different types of Muslims, right? There's different crowds. Even at the same mosque, you find different crowds of people. So there are the ones who are maybe only sort of culturally Muslim. They don't mm-hmm. care to follow any so-called rules or whatever, but they identify with it culturally. And then there's also on the totally other end of the spectrum, I guess, if you want to call it that, there's like the people who will very rigidly follow the rule and are not open to any sort of new interpretation of the Quran, you know, like they're very strict about it. And then and like for me, for example, like I really identify with the middle ground, and I'm really like, I don't know. I'm very like private about it. Like I'm not trying to.
Right.
Like I'm private about my spirituality in general. Mm-hmm. And I'm not like, there are elements of both sides of that spectrum that I really like and elements that I don't like on both sides of it. Right. And that's kind of very similar to feminism and being a feminist and just being a woman in this world. Where you're like, I'm trying to enjoy my life, okay, mm-hmm. and not always think about the ways that I'm being oppressed by the patriarchy and society overall. But I also need there to be change. I need my rights to be respected. I need to have autonomy over my body. So it's very similar, I would say.
Okay, yeah, I can totally see that. Mm-hmm. And I would say that with Fleabag, the person. She, I don't know, it was just kind of weird to me how, and she ended up acknowledging it in a way towards the end of the season. And I think she came to that realization where she had very much intentionally, and I feel like when I say intentionally, I mean like had not really made any attempt to pull herself out of it. And maybe it had to do with the trauma of losing her friend and business partner too, where she had attached her self-worth to her ability to get men to have sex with her.
But that, I think, was mostly had a lot to do with the guilt that she had been feeling for her friend's death. And
yes,
and just like, it was sort of like punishing herself too. Yeah. Because she,
but it was also like, the reason why, actually,
not punishing, but it was a way to numb her emotions.
That makes sense.
Yeah. I think that's what that was. That didn't have anything to do with like her feminist ideals or whatever.
That's true. But it was just kind of funny that she kept calling herself a feminist at various portions throughout the show and then would do things that kind of like undermine herself.
Okay, but what? How do you define a feminist?
I don't. In the sense like,
how
that
would
I feel
you
like
define?
Would I define a feminist?
How do you define feminism?
That is a very difficult question that I have not actually delved that much into.
I am really,
to be honest,
never had a conversation about feminism of mine. Oh my god!
I know. I think the best. I think the best thing that the best sort of quip shorthand version of it that I had heard, and obviously I'm more, it's sticking in my mind because it tells me, it speaks to it from my perspective of not being, you know, female. But it was this weird quote which was just like, which just said that the patriarchy says that boys will be boys, feminism says that men can be better.
Yeah,
and that's
part of it.
That, mm-hmm. Yeah, I know, but that's,
yeah.
That's the part that where I could see it, you know?
Yeah.
I could, because I can only speak to these things from my perspective, you know?
Yeah.
At least not without doing the kind of extensive study that I would need to.
Right. No, that's cool.
So it's more, for me, at least as in terms of being a guy, it's like, it's kind of like feminism is just, in general, the idea that people are people. Like one of the things mm-hmm. that always really pissed me off is when politicians, especially, you remember in 2016 when Donald Trump had that whole Hollywood Access tapes bullshit thing that he said?
Do I remember the horrors of 2016? Yes, Aman, I do. Yes. Continue.
Okay, I wasn't sure. I thought maybe you had blotted them out of your
mind. That's true. I mean, that's fair. Yeah, all that's right. Also a fair.
But he was just saying it's like this most fucking misogynistic thing ever. Mm-hmm. And every fucking politician who is starting to make some attempt to like distance themselves and condemn it always started it off with like, oh, I have daughters, I have mom. And it's like, and I was like, you don't need to have any females in your life to know that that is a disgusting bullshit ass statement, like interaction that he had.
Right.
That Trump said that you don't need to know any woman to know that's gross, disgusting, disrespectful, and worth condemning. You know, like, I'm not a dog owner, but I still feel bad if somebody is kicking a dog.
Right.
Like, it's just bad. I don't need to own a dog to know that that is a bad thing and to say, hey, that's bad, stop it. You know, like.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's
not needed.
It's very interesting when men resort to the like, oh, I have a mother and a daughter and, you know, a wife. And blah. It's like, okay, Jesus. Yeah, no, good point. But
so that's kind of, at least as a man, what being a feminist is to me, is kind of that fundamental idea that like everybody, all people are just people. We all deserve the same level of respect, and we all deserve and have a responsibility to show everyone else the same level of courtesy and treatment without putting anyone else into a box not of their choosing.
Right. Mm-hmm.
That's kind of how I define it. Very uneducated point of view.
Yes. This reminds me of a conversation I had in grad school mm-hmm. with another female student of mine. Like, she was in, we were in the same class, some of the same classes. And I don't know, we were talking about lifestyle things. And I think I was probably talking about being Muslim and stuff. And I personally don't wear clothing that shows my legs, or I don't even wear sleeveless things, whatever. And that is just, you know, that started off as something that my mom told me and I just followed. And then as now an adult, I've also made the decision to just like, okay, that's just how I want to live my life. And when I was telling this person this, she was like, oh, but I thought you were a feminist. And so I was like, yeah, I am. Just because I choose not to wear shorts doesn't mean I'm not a feminist, you know? Like, I think, and then I asked her, I was like, what, how do you think of feminism when you think of it? And then I told her, I was like, you know, when I think of feminism, I just think about how every woman has a right to live her life however she wants to without having to feel restricted by anything or anyone. And I was like, that is feminism, you know, for any girl or woman to be able to live her life, you know, to get an education if she wants to like get a job or not get a job, you know, like it's just, it's a matter of like being able to make choices for your own life and your own body. And so, yeah. So, I mean, I thought that was really interesting too, right? I mean, like, so it's funny because you just said how in Fleabag, it seems like she's like flaunting too much, and that makes her seem like it seems at odds with her.
No, it wasn't ideals. It wasn't her flaunting herself that I think was. Uh-huh. It was her tying her self-worth specifically to, like, it was her internal identity, the way she was valuing herself in a way that went against it. If she was just like, yep, I love going around having sex, good for you. That's not the, that wasn't the thing that was, that I saw as contrarian.
But that's what I would say is the patriarchy and society and the patriarchal society wearing her down and other women down to think that their self-worth is so low, right? And also Fleabag, the character, had, you know, gone through a lot of trauma, was dealing with a lot of guilt, was trying to numb a lot of that. And again, not own up to her own shit. And so, like, I mean, there was a lot of that mixed up in there. But I also think society in general, like, makes women feel pretty worthless. And like, no matter what they do, whether you could be wearing too many clothes or not enough clothes, or, you know, like, you could be like, there's no no-win situation here. Like, it really, for women, there's just no winning.
You know that, you know what that just reminded me of?
What?
The song Bashir with the Good Beard.
Yes. From We Are Lady Parts.
Yes. Wait,
what particularly about that song?
That line, do I laugh? Do I laugh too much? Do I, what was it?
Yeah, wait, I'm trying to think. Do I laugh? Are my clothes too tight? Do I laugh too much? Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You say I'm not polite, and I say, fuck you very much.
That song is so good. We'll include it on the show good. Notes.
I was like, listening to it on like a loop.
Oh yeah,
my wife was gonna kill me.
I love listening to those songs in the car and just blasting it. Oh, so good. Yeah. So yeah. There we go. That was fun, Aman. We've never had like a full proper discussion about feminism before.
I know, and you know, it made me also think about so. You know, as our listeners know, I relatively recently became a parent
to a
child.
You hesitated so much to say that, but yeah.
I mean, the important part of it is not the definition of father or mother. It's parent to me, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, I don't really give a shit about whether I need to change a diaper, wash bottles, or, you know, do the goddamn plumbing in the house, because it needs to be done. And it's all right. Just part of stuff that is part of being a parent. So that's why I had to I wanted to think about it and right. whatnot. But I was thinking about families where one parent chooses to be a stay-at-home parent. Oftentimes, sometimes for financial reasons, sometimes for personal choices, mm-hmm. you know, and how in more recent, in more recent decades, you know, more and more men have been choosing to be stay-at-home fathers. Mm-hmm. And in the context of feminism, I was thinking like, you know, does this make those fathers more feminist than the parent, than the dads who choose not to be the stay-at-home parent? And I was just thinking about that, and I realized, no, the important part of it is whether that couple, that family, had a discussion mm-hmm. and then proactively made a choice about which parent would work outside of the house and which parent would work inside of the at home, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And do the majority of child rearing, I guess.
Yeah.
And I realize it's not about who goes out and who stays at home and who's out of the house working. It's about mm-hmm. whether that choice was made, whether that was an actual discussion that happened mm-hmm. in that household. And I would say that, I don't know, you tell me, does that fall more in line with the various philosophies that exist of feminism?
I mean, geez, I'm not a feminist scholar at all, but there's way, way too many feminist books I still need to read in my life. Feminist meaning like books on feminism and actual academic texts about it. So
I would say, though, you have read more Roxane Gay columns than I have. So
yes, I have read two of her books, which are both excellent.
I have read one.
I mean, yeah, I think that you're right. Like, it does have to do with the choice. It has to be like a full, like an actual joint decision for it to feel really feminist. While you were talking about that, it just reminded me towards the beginning of the pandemic, you know, when mm-hmm. obviously, I mean, it's still chaotic now, geez, with like right. all the shortages and this impending food crisis we're hitting.
Thank you, Governor Abbott.
Yeah. Well, also the war in Ukraine. But yeah, so I remember reading this story about, like, I mean, during the pandemic, like, obviously people were struggling with paying rent and all these things. And I read this story about this one couple, both the man and woman were working. Mm-hmm. She had a higher paying job. And yet, I don't remember if they decided together. I have a feeling it was not really decided together. But she ended up quitting her job to take care of the kids. And he kept his lower paying job to provide for the whole family. Now, make it make sense. Come on, y'all.
I can't.
It's just like,
I can't.
This is just, you're throwing basic math out the window for your own fucking patriarchal pride.
I mean, there are a couple of things that I can think of. All right. Mm-hmm. There are a lot of mothers who really define themselves by their motherhoods, define their identity mm-hmm. through their motherhoods. And there are a lot of fathers who are not really, and this is just observational on my part. I can't I'm not basing this off of any studies. I'm not basing this off of anything. It's just kind of conversations that my wife and I have had. I think that there are a lot of fathers who aren't really given a chance to be good at child rearing. Mm-hmm. And so then they don't get any good at it. And I can't even tell you how many times I have heard of mothers basically saying that their husbands, the fathers, can't do anything right, that they're not helpful because they can't do anything right, you know?
Yeah.
And so they don't let them do anything.
It's definitely has been an issue for centuries.
So the statement that you're saying about like, how does the math there make sense? You're right, it doesn't. But without knowing the internal dynamics of that family, it's hard to actually, because there's a lot of intangibles that go into a decision like that. mm-hmm. where it could have been a joint decision. And
sure, fine.
And okay. I'm just saying that there's so many components to it that go beyond just salary.
I get that. Okay. Obviously, when you really focus in on any situation, any human being, there's like a million different nuances to it.
Yeah.
This story that I was reading was part of, I mean, this was like one part of a story, which was part of a larger story about how during this pandemic, far more women
yes.
have left the workforce yes. than men. It has mm-hmm. actually pushed us back in terms of like women's economic empowerment by decades.
Yes.
And that is like, I mean, that's a whole trend that's happening, right? And like that is a cultural, societal issue there at that point.
Some bullshit is what it is.
Yeah. So, I mean, I do get everything that you're saying, right? Like it right. really does like, yeah, I mean, that totally could have happened, you know, where this yeah. couple had a whole discussion about it and that is what they felt most comfortable with and for their own peace of mind and all that. That's totally fair. That's possible. But yeah. there are just too many instances where immediately that role of caregiver, domestic, whatever, anything to do with unpaid labor in the home, that's the woman's domain.
Yes. Yes. All too often, that is what automatically happens
mm-hmm.
and it's bullshit.
Yeah. Yeah. And okay, going back to the show that we were talking about, Fleabag.
the main subject of this episode.
Sure. I also want to talk about the sister Claire. Because she's in this like ridiculously fucked up marriage with Martin.
It's so weird and fucked up.
And he is, okay, that actor is like, he's so gross in Fleabag.
Isn't he the same guy who
played Stranger Things? Yes.
Yes.
Yeah, he's in Stranger Things. Yep. One of my friends who watched Fleabag before Stranger Things, she was like, I can't look at him in Stranger Things. Like, he's still that disgusting character Martin from Fleabag for me. So anyway, so gross. He's so and it's like the whole time you're wondering, like, why is Claire with him? She's like this hotshot lawyer, you know? She's like making bank. She does not need to be with this dude, Martin, and his creepy, creepy stepson. You know, like, what is going on there?
In a twist of irony, Lena, there's a whole scene where there's a whole conversation where she said she's not a lawyer.
She's not?
She's not. Her dad her dad was like, wait, no, you're a solicitor. And she's like, nope.
Wait, I'm not a lawyer. Does she ever say what she is?
I think she was just like she works in finance. She's like
in finance. Yeah, that's true. She works in
finance. She's not a lawyer. That is twice, Lena. Dang.
Okay. To be fair, I watched the show a very long time ago. I mean,
You made two mistakes that were actually called out by characters in the show.
That's funny. Okay, but the point is, it tricked everyone. And then when they do point it out to everyone. Anyway, point is, she is completely financially independent.
Yes.
She does not need Martin in her life. And yet she stays in this horrible, stupid marriage, right?
Well, it's because makes her laugh.
And that's stupid. I mean, geez, watch like freaking like Pee Wee Herman if you want to laugh, you know, like dude can do the same thing. Like, but yeah, anyway. So just another example of how the patriarchy beats you down.
Yeah.
But I'm making you think you don't deserve better.
Yes. Yes.
So yeah.
I mean, yeah, that's yeah. I mean, it was just such a fucked up marriage. It didn't make any sense to me.
And in, okay, season 2, episode 1, my absolute favorite episode of, like, the entire show. That whole dinner scene where they're like, oh, yeah, Martin's given up drinking. And, you know, like, Claire's given it up along with him to support him. And then
he's doing shots on the side.
Yeah, she, like, catches him doing. And it's like, you're just such a dirtbag. You know, like, what the hell? So.
It does also make me wonder whether Claire's nostrils are broken.
I know, yeah. Like, does she not smell that? That's true. That's
Because you can smell that. Like,
but the thing is, like, we always, for at least for people you quote unquote fall in love with and stuff. Mm-hmm. And like, you know, you make ridiculous excuses for people like that.
This is true.
Yeah.
This is true. Yeah.
And I think it's like, you know, sometimes when you're just so desperate to cling to whatever control you have in life, you will make any and every excuse and story up in your head to just like maintain that control.
Yeah.
Yeah.
One thing people hate is admitting that they're wrong.
Yeah.
And that includes, and I'm not talking about things like, oh, the sky is blue. No, it's not. It's red right now. No, it's blue. You know, and I'm talking about like, especially when it comes to things like choices you have made. Being told that a choice you have made was wrong and that you were wrong for making that choice is something that people will fight tooth and nail against you for telling you that you're wrong, and within their own minds to even convince themselves that the facts are different, you know, that they're not wrong, because that people have a violent resistance to admitting that they're wrong.
Yeah. Just take a look at society now in America.
Yes.
And how it's crumbling apart.
Yep.
Great.
I do have to say, I did love how the priest was the only one who noticed that Fleabag did this fourth wall breaking thing.
Yes. It was so, see, that's how you know they were perfect for each other. That's just how you know. He was so good. Have we talked about the priest enough?
Not enough.
He's
just a very sweary priest.
I love it. And I love how she's like, she turns the camera and she's like, oh, he's a sweary priest, you know? I just, every observation that she makes straight to the camera, brilliant. Just so brilliant.
So good.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, and the way that they just, like, the second season is also a, you know, exploration of spirituality as well. In some ways, you know, like where he takes her, like the discussions that they have with each other. Mm-hmm. And then remember he takes her to that one.
Like, the Quaker meeting?
Yeah, the Quaker meeting. Yeah, that was just really, I mean, I don't know. It was just interesting. It was like, it was fun to see these two people, these two characters who you were like, never in a million years. Why would you ever be attracted to each other? You know? And it is just like this chemistry. And they just can't, like, you know, like they feel it, the audience feels it, we all feel it, you know, like it's just, it's so good. And I don't know. It's just like, it's this whole show is just so interesting. It's like, it's about like everything and nothing all at the same time.
Yes. It's, except like, it made more sense than Seinfeld.
Well, okay, fine, sure. But
like, I'm just thinking of the only other show that I can think of that has been described as a show about nothing.
That's true. That's true. I mean, this show went deeper than Seinfeld and dealt with very like intense themes, like we were saying, trauma and grief and guilt. Mm-hmm. But yeah.
What'd you think of the godmother?
Oh my God. She was so just wonderfully obnoxious and hideous. It was, I mean, what's that actress? Olivia Colman. She's amazing. She's won like multiple Oscars. But she's just like that like fake smile she plasters on her face. Like, oh, sweetheart, you don't look very nice in that dress, you know? And then she's like smiling at you like as she's insulting you.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, it was so good. And also the like ongoing joke about the statue and stealing the statue. Oh my, so brilliant. Oh my God. that was great. But I mean, I don't know what else to say about the godmother. I hated her and loved her at the same time.
I thought it was interesting how like she was very much designed to be a horrible person kind of character.
Yes.
And yet she was still like straight from the get-go. This is like the mother's funeral and she's already trying to make moves on the widowed dad.
Yeah.
You know, like dick moves straight from the start.
Right.
All right. Mm-hmm. And then she like is trying to drive this wedge between her fiance. I guess. Mm-hmm. And his daughters, basically. Like, she actively is putting a wedge between them.
Yep.
You know? Also, a dick move.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, I mean, the dad says this to Fleabag. He was like, I'm happy.
Yeah.
I deserve to be happy. I love this woman. And mm-hmm. I deserve to be happy. Mm-hmm. And you know, like, what do you do for the people that you love? Like, it explores a lot. The show explores a lot of very small but very interesting and deep questions.
Yeah.
You know, mm-hmm. do you let somebody like that to your loved one's lives?
Mm-hmm.
Even if it means, like, denying them their happiness, or if it means that that's the only way that they can be happy, you know, like, what do you do?
Right.
Mm-hmm. And not just what do you do, what can you do?
Yeah. And I feel like by the end of the whole show,
mm-hmm.
they are in this better place with their dad. Like, they've just got this better, they've got this understanding about each other. Mm-hmm. And they've set their boundaries with each other. And they also know, like, the sisters know, we're never going to love our godmother like this. Right. Or now stepmother or whatever, you know?
Yeah.
And, like, that's okay. You know, like, the dad's, like, fine with that. And they're like, you can just be married to our dad. Sure. Whatever.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, that's very true. It's very, and then I also loved the, like, often Fleabag, the character, her dad was not really backing her up a lot of times. He was there for her in, like, weird, quirky dad ways sometimes. And then oftentimes he was just sort of, like, abandoning her. But her sister, who she clashes with all the time, they're such opposites. You know, Claire is very much put together, has control over her life, you know, making bank, whatever. But her sister does, like, Claire does, you know, she's there for her. She has her back, even though she's, like, cussing her out at the same time. She still has her back. And
they
and
still end up going to a silent retreat together.
Yeah. And, like, and, you know, Fleabag has Claire's back and stuff. And so there's just this very strong bond of sisterhood and loyalty. Which I thought was just very nice. And, you know, and even Claire at some point, doesn't she say something like, I don't know what I would do if something happened to you, or something like that, you know?
Oh, I'd run through an airport for you.
Yeah, I'd run through, that was so much better. Yeah, I'd run through an airport for you. When she was, oh my God, when Fleabag is trying to tell Claire, like, go after the man you actually love. Like, and she's like, only psychotic people do that, but I would run through an airport for you.
Only psychotic people run through an airport.
Yeah, so sweet. That was one of the most touching lines in the entire show, I would say. Yeah.
It was. It was. Yeah. It was very sweet.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Anyway. Well, I think we've covered pretty much everything.
And here you thought we'd have nothing to talk about.
I was like, crap, what are we talking about? Yeah. And anyway, nice. Covered it all.
But also, you know, to wrap it up, it's a good show.
It's a fantastic show.
Yeah.
If you are like the millions of people around the world who have COVID and are recovering and isolating away from your loved ones, I would highly recommend watching Fleabag.
It's very good.
It's fantastic. Writing is excellent. Cool. All right. Cool. On that note, thank you, as always, for listening to Grounded Geeks.
And we'll catch you next time.